which is the report of the Due Process Oversight Committee, which is, as you know, a central duty for the Board of Trustees. David.
Thank you, Michelle, and I'm happy to report that at our meeting yesterday, we had a lot of trustees who are not formal members of the committee attend, so we were able to benefit from a lot of input on some, I think, important areas. Let me begin the report on two topics which require action of the trustees. One is the due process handbook, and the second is on the review of the interpretations committee. Let me begin with the due process handbook, and just a little bit of background on this, as we have a number of new trustees. Last year, the DPOC spent a lot of time with a huge amount of help from Alan and team on developing a protocol that the DPOC could use when providing oversight on behalf of the trustees of the due process. Again, just a reminder, we do not get into the technical issues. We oversee the due process procedures. We, as part of that process, got feedback from the Advisory Council and have had a number of conversations with the trustee body on that protocol. We thought it was important to, at the same time, revise the due process handbook, which has not been revised in a fairly long time and was in need of revision. So we have, in parallel to the production of the protocol, Alan has done an extraordinary amount of work in order to revise the due process manual to do a number of things. One, to provide some overview of the work that the trustees themselves do in terms of providing oversight. Secondly, to incorporate the interpretation committee within that work, so it refers not just to the ISB but to the procedures at the interpretation committee, which were largely similar. And then thirdly, to make sure that it reflects current best practice, and we did conduct some benchmarking of what best practice was. So we've made a lot of progress through the work of Alan to really review the steps that the ISB is expected to take in terms of due process, and also to becoming clearer about what the trustee group, the DPOC, is meant to do in providing oversight. The third aspect of this, and we spent time on it yesterday, was to look at the metrics that can be produced to demonstrate to the DPOC that those due process steps have been followed. And I think we were extraordinarily encouraged that what has actually been happening is that the staff have really been looking at their internal processes to strengthen them in terms of project management, and that what the trustees will get is, in essence, the reporting slice which deals with due process, so that it's a tool that is being developed not just for the purposes of demonstrating to us that the due process has been followed, but is a tool to actually help manage the execution of those steps. And I think we, as a group, felt that that was a very positive development. What we want to do is to put out for comment the due process handbook and the latest version of this protocol that the DPOC uses. We would like to get the comments of the full trustee group on the draft, and the proposal is we as a DPOC gave some feedback yesterday, and there are a number of steps that Alan wants to complete, for instance making sure that it reflects the wording in the strategic review, that it fully incorporates the protocol that we developed last year, and a number of other steps to just ensure that the paper is complete and thoroughly done. So we would propose to get to the trustees end of next week a copy for your review, and then we would incorporate any feedback and then get it out for public comment, which we would ideally like to do end of this month into early May, depending on the feedback we get. With that by way of background, let me ask Alan to give a little bit more specificity of some of the content.
Thanks, David. I think you actually, I was very encouraged by your description because it's consistent with most of my notes, and it's I think we're thinking the same way. One thing I sort of by way of background is that, as David said, we haven't had a major overhaul of this, the handbook, since it was first put together. And what we often do is I think the handbook really establishes our minimum standards of consultation and puts in the safety valves for us to make sure that we're actually consulting in an appropriate manner. And since then, we've made tremendous progress in terms of the amount of outreach that we do, the different tools that we use to collect information. The sort of example I use is the request for views and request for information that supplement our exposure drafts, some of the more focused groups that we have. And so it's appropriate for us to essentially catalogue what we're doing, and where things are very effective for us, particularly a lot of the investor outreach, which is now targeted, when that's proving to be a very effective tool in a project, you have to ask the question, maybe we should do that across the range of projects, or at least ask the question, should we do that, and explain why it's not necessary in a project. So that's our comply or explain. So a lot of this review is actually is documenting and embedding into our processes the good things that we've been doing, we think, over the last 3 or 4 years that have not reflected in the handbook. So that's part of periodic review. As David said, the other thing that's motivated this is some of the other steps. DPOC's protocol itself was very important, and effectively how we demonstrate what we've been doing. There's another example. I think over the last 18 months, we've established ways of demonstrating our protocol, how we've exercised our responsibilities, reporting that to the DPOC, and so now we've built that into the handbook to say this is the sort of reporting that you do. The strategic review is very important, and the types of things that have come out of that are, and it's not just our strategy review, but the monitoring board. And the monitoring board still retains the right to refer, if necessary, an item they think that the board should consider, and they refer that to the trustees and to the chair of the ISB. And the board now is responsible for then reporting back to the monitoring board if they decide not to take that issue on. And they have to explain that. And that's not reflected in our handbook, that's reflected in a request from the monitoring board. So it's important for us to put things like the formalisation of reporting. In the strategy review, we talk about effect analysis and how we need to make sure that we establish a well-accepted process for that. And within this document, we're showing how we're going to be embedding throughout the standard setting process, and this theme of integration is very important, the standard setting process consideration of the likely effects of standards. So as well as that, both the monitoring board and also in the strategy review, we talk about the importance of communication with market or securities regulators and with prudential regulators. And so we've embedded into the handbook, we're acknowledging this. It's very tricky with this. We understand that accounting requirements that we produce are used by a wide range of regulators, tax authorities and all sorts. We can't be expected to know all of those, but we do understand the potential of regulators are important, and so are market regulators. So we're trying to formalise that by ensuring within the handbook it indicates that we must have consultation with that. It's not prescriptive because accompanying this as we go on, we're going to have to build up our more formal networks. In the same way, the sections in the handbook that deal with liaison anticipate the work we're going to be doing on strategy review, or implementing that, on how we interact and build up a network of standard setters and others. But the rewrite provides an appropriate framework for that. Just want to emphasise one other thing, and David sort of mentioned integration in a way, because when we started this exercise, we anticipated that we would have two documents. One would be the DP protocols, and another would be the due process handbook itself. But in writing it, and partly in response to the review that we've done on the Interpretations Committee, there seemed no sense in having separate due process handbooks for the board and the Interpretations Committee, because they all operate under the same transparency, accountability, and so on. So we've basically built into the framework in the handbook, a framework is setting out those principles and then how it applies to each of those groups, and also how the groups of the board and the interpretations committee relate to each other, because that was a theme that came out in our the review we did of the interpretations committee. At the same time, it became clear that the way we report to the due process oversight committee, really we probably should be reporting the same information to the board, and if you're doing that, we should be transparent to the outside world about how we're undertaking these activities. So rather than treating this as being a separate process for the DPOC, we integrated the reporting processes into the handbook. So the whole thing has been, as we go along each part of the project, we are continually keeping the DPOC up to date with where we are. But as David said, we're actually doing something better internally. We're managing that ourselves. Sue and I will be able to tell quite easily when the last time a working group met, because we're introducing reporting protocols for working groups. We'll be able to, we have checks and balances about making sure we've been through process steps. That's our internal process. It helps the teams. We feed that information to the board. If the board's unhappy that we haven't met a working group for a while, they can challenge us on that. And if the DPOC is unhappy, they have an opportunity as well. So I think this is it will bring potentially some behavioural changes and certainly some more transparency to what I think is the excellent work that we've been doing but really haven't shared with anybody. One of our failings is we do a lot of hard work behind the scenes and don't share, don't tell everybody what we're doing. The other thing that we did yesterday was just for the DPOC, we just demonstrated very quickly our new design for the website, because we think that we've designed what we think is a sensible way of reporting that builds all of these protocols into our day-to-day reporting for the outside world. And the objective is then, so rather than as we started to do have special reports for the DPOC, we would tend to have a much higher level summary report. And if the DPOC, at their leisure, if they wanted to, could check through websites and see what we're doing. But it becomes an exception and a highlight report for you as opposed to a special report.
So, Michelle, I would ask that the trustees give us any additional feedback to the document that they've received. We will, however, be sending a final draft to everyone, hopefully the end of next week or early the following. And I would request that you delegate to the due process committee incorporation of those comments and getting on behalf of the trustees a document out for public comment.
Thanks, David. Any comments, any questions on this? Yes, Pedro.
I have a very brief one. I'm not sure if this is the moment, David, but I read with great interest the report that the chairman of our advisory council addressed to you on the subject of the agenda for public consultation. It's a very impressive work. As I read the material, say we have received 245 comments letters. We have this online survey of investors' view and suggestions for agenda consultation. We had the best feedback from the outreach activities. But it seems to me that the comments of Paul Cherry, the chairman of the advisory comments addressed to you on this question, are very well taken, and I just want to use the opportunity to put this on record.
I was actually going to refer to that later, but I think a good demonstration of how the due process is working. One of the requirements is that the trustees get feedback from the advisory council on the ISB's agenda setting process. So we asked, and as you can see from that note, the advisory council has had a lot of discussions on the agenda setting. So it's actually very easy for us to just say, give us your feedback. And I think that's what we're finding, to Alan's point, that many of these steps have been extremely well executed in the past. And what the DPOC is doing is just providing a little bit more discipline about the documentation and evidence that they're being followed. But I agree with you. I think that was a demonstration that the process is working very well.
Okay. Other questions? I think one of the important things you underline is the very close link between the oversight side of things and the fact that it is also and together a project management tool, which raises the issue of whether we should be auditing or having ongoing supervision. It is solved because it is totally integrated, and I think that's a very efficient way to deal with our respective duties. Okay, David.
The second decision item is we started a review of the Interpretations Committee back in 2010. The DPOC has had a number of discussions on the results of that review, and this was done through public comment, and we supported doing a number of administrative improvements along the way, which have largely occurred. And then there were a number of questions that were asked of a much more strategic nature. And at the last meeting in January, we asked Wayne and Hans to come to some agreement of how to address those strategic questions, because in many ways they were the much bigger questions about the amount and type of guidance that was being given, the way that the Interpretations Committee interacted with the ISB, the way that when a decision was made not to take something on as a topic, the way that a notice of rejection was being used. So a number of very important strategic questions. We again reviewed this in detail yesterday. There's an exceptionally well-written report from my perspective which lays out the comments that were received and how those comments have been addressed. And let me just ask Wayne to add a little bit more color on this, because ultimately I think that what makes the Interpretations Committee more effective is going to be how Wayne as the chair and Hans make it work.
Thank you, David. I think you read my notes again. I just have a camera over here behind Alan and me. You have the report in front of you. Jeffrey Lucy offered some editorial comments that we will incorporate. But beyond those, it is subject to your comments. It's pretty much done. I think there are four messages that I'd like to share with you that I think are important in that report. First, there was a broad perception among several of the people who commented that the Interpretations Committee and the board did not work as a partnership, that instead they were too much like two people who live in the same house and never talk to each other. I think all you have to do is to look at the last four or five board meetings to know that if that was the case in the past, it is no longer the case today. There's been a constant flow back and forth between the Interpretations Committee and the board. The Interpretations Committee asking for the board's guidance on issues, the committee putting forward suggestions to the board. So any perception that we're not a partnership, I think, should be gone. We have four board members now who attend every Interpretations Committee meeting. The second message is that there is a much broader toolkit available to the committee. One of the frustrations in the comments was that the committee was not meeting the demand adequately for implementation guidance. And as a matter of fact, one of the telling comments that I received from committee members when I talked to them before I took the job was that we seem to spend too much time deciding why we're not going to do something rather than deciding what we should do. I think that's gone now. The results of this process have opened up a number of alternatives, ranging all the way from traditional interpretation to proposing amendments, even to the development, if the committee sees fit, of educational materials. And we have a couple of candidates. We haven't done that yet, but we have a couple of candidates that may be useful. Given that we have a broader toolkit, my expectation is that we will have fewer agenda rejection notices because we have more things that we can do. And these have been the rejection notices have been a troublesome area in practice. And so we took to the board and to the committee an analysis that is replicated in the text of the document, essentially saying, number one, there will be times that the committee reaches a decision about accounting that it believes it doesn't have to take forward, but it does have a view. If it does that, it should say so. However, those notices are not part of the corpus of IFRS and therefore do not compel a change in accounting method on a preparer. An individual regulator in his or her jurisdiction may see fit to require companies under their supervision to go that way, but that's not what we do. We also do not characterize things as corrections of errors. Correction of an error is an extraordinarily sensitive area in most jurisdictions. It's not a business that we are in, nor are we equipped even with the materials that we use to examine an issue, typically to be able to make that kind of a judgment. If we did, we would guarantee that many fewer people would come to the door and ask for advice. And that's not what we want to encourage. So the rejections will continue to some degree. They are also frequently criticized for being too obscure. Looking back over the years, I have several in mind that are in fact obscure, and we're working internally on ways to be more specific and concise in getting them out. The last topic that I wanted to mention to you is the question of the criteria that the committee uses to do something. I have to say that my original inclination was to leave the old criteria unchanged because it's much more a matter of attitude and outlook than the specific principles that are articulated in agenda criteria. As I worked around the world and talked to the committee, I came to the conclusion that I was wrong in that. That rewording the criteria creates an outward and visible sign of something that is, in fact, interior. And that the old criteria were worded largely in the context of the committee's work product being interpretations. And that's not the only work product that we have now. So we did rework the criteria. I think it speaks well to the committee that we did it in one meeting and were able to do it efficiently. But I think the new criteria reflect the broader mandate that the committee now has and confirm what was already a matter of attitude among the committee members about the direction that it ought to go. So subject to the editorial changes that Jeffrey proposed, I think I would put it to you that unless you all have something else you want us to do, this one is about done.
So what we would ask, Michelle, is for the trustees to approve the issuance of the report as a conclusion of the review of the committee, which is set out in tab 3E.
Do you have any comments or do you approve? Approval? Okay.
Those were the two action items for the trustees. We also continued the dialogue around how to conduct post-implementation reviews. And to just again remind everyone, we have a requirement for post-implementation reviews. We have not completed one yet. So over the last part of 2011 and again in the January meeting this year, we spent a lot of time trying to really, before a review is actually conducted, really try and set out what we're trying to achieve in those reviews and how to achieve it. We, I think, have had a very good discussion yesterday on the proposal, which is in the materials here, which I think we feel very comfortable is a good first approach. I would remind everyone, and we're, I think, going to incorporate it into the document here, that this is we're going to learn as we go on this being our first one, but we think that this gets us going in a constructive way. I mentioned at the January meeting that the FASB through the trustee, through the foundation, has a different approach. The foundation is actually conducting the post-implementation reviews. I think we continue to be comfortable with the way we are conducting this. There's a very good working relationship between the FASB, the FAF team that have done their review, and Alan's team to ensure that as we conduct these, if they've done a similar review on a standard that we have worked on jointly, that we learn from where they have been, and similarly they learn from the work that we do. So at this point, I think the DPOC was very comfortable with the approach to implementation of this post-implementation review, and we'll incorporate it now in the handbook and in the protocol that the trustees follow for review. I don't think, Alan, there's much more to add than that. We also spent time discussing an area that I think we've had concern about in the past, which is how working groups operate. Are they effective? And again, Alan did, I think, some very good work proposing an annual review of the working groups where we can really get an update on how the working groups are operating. Are they meeting? Is their scope clear? Are people attending? Do we have the right attendees? So bringing a little bit more formality to the process. And we actually had a very good discussion yesterday that given that what we're really trying to get from these working groups tends to often be very technical, broad general working groups may not be as effective as much more targeted groups. So I think the staff are thinking very hard on how to make these working groups more effective. We spent time getting an update on XBRL. We rely on two groups. There's an advisory council and there's a technical council. They provide us assurance that a lot of the due diligence around XBRL is taking place. I think we as a committee are very happy that it's being more integrated into the technical side, and now their report to Alan, which I think we feel is a good step. And we talked about what needs to be done in terms of next steps of formulating a strategic review. We also talked about how we continue to work with jurisdictions around the world, particularly the SEC, in terms of getting XBRL as an acceptable means of filing IFRS statements. So again, I think we had good evidence that there is continued progress, but I think a fair amount of work to do as we try and get users around the world to onboard using the taxonomy that a lot of people have worked very hard to develop. The final area is we obviously, as our name implies, we have had a discussion yesterday with Alan and Sue about the technical agenda and if there were any due process issues being raised, and we were informed that there were none, which probably reflects a little bit the where the standards in development are. We also talked about some of the letters which again are in these materials, one in connection with SMEs and the whether it's appropriate for Q&As to be developed. In terms of SMEs, I think the staff has made it a moot point by saying they're not going to issue further Q&As until they've done a formal review of how the SME process operates. And then secondly, while we don't actually have in our sweaty hands a copy of a letter that was sent from Deloitte dealing with the topic that Alan touched on earlier, which was a request for changing the effective date of standards 10, 11, and 12, and we've asked Alan to obviously get us those letters and look and see if they are that letter is raising any issues of due process. We actually, at the time of receiving a letter from FRAC, had considered the due process steps around those standards And so I think that we feel comfortable, without having seen the specifics of that letter, that due process had been followed. But if new points are raised, the DPOC will address them. And finally, we've looked at some of the work product we need to complete in order to comply with the strategic review. I don't know how, but rather a lot of the work to do is end up with DPOC next to it. Maybe, Yael, you could change that and more evenly delegate steps, but I think we feel comfortable that we can get to those by the end of the year. Having said that, let me ask my fellow committee members, or Alan, or anyone else who was at the meeting, to add anything if they would like to.
Yes, Pedro.
I just want to, it's not a question, just to see if we could be assured, either through you or Wayne or Alan. I saw in the technical agenda item 2B that we have, and I think it's a very good idea, whereas annual improvements project. It's a rolling three-year cycle there. I'm told that, if I read well, that we have 7 proposed amendments in June 2011, 7 proposed amendments to 5 IRFs have been considering under this rolling three-year cycle. I just want to see if this thing is working right, the process for this, what we decide to do in terms of annual improvement projects, knowing that they have narrower in scope than the other major issues that we have addressed before. But we are confident that the process is going well on the annual improvement project.
And I will ask Alan to answer it. We did review, I think it was at the beginning of 2011, the actual criteria that should be followed for annual improvements. We actually had a bit of a backlog, which created some interest externally, and we actually responded to a couple of letters about the due process. But I think we feel comfortable that there is an effective due process around the criteria that have to be followed. I think one of the things that has been a very constructive development has been that the team have done some really good thinking about what is an interpretation, what is an improvement, and what has to go through a standard process. So I think there's a much more seamless flow of the various alternatives and how you decide which of those alternatives are followed. But Alan, do you want to pick up from that?
Wayne and I were saying who should take this, and I think that reflects the fact that it's because we're working together on this, and that's the big change we've got. It's really about maintenance. And the annual improvements thing, my personal view is that it has been in some people's minds slightly over-engineered. And essentially, we've found things that need to be fixed in standards, they're necessary. The maintenance process that we have, interpretations, has found something. There's an overhead associated with getting something out for change. And within the respondents as well, we know the processes for actually getting with authorization for a letter to comment on it is also quite onerous for some. So what we do is we take a whole lot of essentially unrelated but small, narrow changes and put them into one package and say, please comment on all these. And we accumulate them over 12 months or so. And so really the criteria, it's a safety valve here to make sure that people don't perceive that we're sneaking something into there that's a little bit more pervasive or a bit more dangerous or a bigger change than that really should be put out by itself. And so that's really essentially what it is. As David said, I think we've had 2 letters in relation to changes, both of them related to the conceptual framework and consequences that were in our standards. And in both cases, the Due Process Oversight Committee noted, let the board consider those letters as part of their processes. And in both cases, the board decided not to proceed with those as well anyway, and that's what we reported back. So I think it's a very effective tool, but perhaps slightly misunderstood by some. I think that the change in due process handbook and the work that's been done by the Interpretations Committee now clarifies that it's part of maintenance and also clarifies when we can put some unrelated things together in one pack.
Harvey?
Just as a member of the Due Process Oversight Committee, I'd like to indicate that the amount of paper before you reflects the real-world amount of work being done. The committee spent over 3 hours yesterday, and David and the staff have done a marvelous job of moving this ahead and bringing it about. Much of it was being done to some degree by the staff anyway, but the real change is thinking it through, rethinking again, putting it into a process. I think we're going to function better not only in terms of committee but in terms of staff from what's been happening. And also keep in mind that this is tentative in a number of places. For instance, the post-implementation reviews I consider a work in progress. We've got to see how that's going to work out, whether 2 years is the right time frame, whether we ought to be more flexible. That will move and change. But there's no question in my mind we're on the right course and this is working.
Thank you, Harvey. This could be a conclusion if you have no other remarks, and a compliment to the DPOC and his chair and to the staff. Can we consider that we have done, that we are done with this item? Okay. Thank you very much, David. Then we will move to the next item, which is the report of the Education and Content Services